Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast. Sorry the audio is a little weird. I'm recording outside of work areas, so don't have my mic with me. Welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast, the podcast that brings a lighthearted look to important business topics. And today, we have a great example of that. Today, we're talking to Winitha Bonney, who is an Order of Australia medalist. And that's amazing. She's done it for diversity and inclusion. She's done so many amazing things. And today, we have an amazing conversation about inclusivity and leaders and how to create safe spaces for them. This is a great conversation, as all of ours are. And so if you want a lighthearted look at business, this is a great place to start. Enjoy, and as always, have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. As you'll be able to tell from the title, we have a guest on today, and we'll get to them shortly. But first, we've got to check in on the regular team, see how they're doing. So we'll start with Al. Al, it's been a little while. How are you going this week?
It has been a little while, Jez. Yeah, I've been away doing some more crane tickets, and I was very excited last week where I actually got to drive a tower crane in real life, lifting real loads, which was lots of fun.
Good job, Al. What was the project for?
It's on a multi-story building and they're getting sort of close to finishing, so we were lifting in all the kitchens.
Oh, nice. Good for you. That's awesome. Danette, how are you going this week?
Yeah, good, Jez. Had a couple of days in Canberra. Went and saw the movie Argyle, which is like a spy movie. It was quite good. Enjoyed it. And I've had the last couple of days at home, which has been lovely. So thank you.
Nice one. Nice one. Always good. Graham, how are you going this week?
Well, it's a loaded question, Jess. But before we get to me, Al, if you happen to have any spare kitchens, can you accidentally drop one down here, please? Because we do need a new one, as you may be aware. Up until... I don't know. Let's call it 11:17 a.m. yesterday, Jess. My week was pretty good. Then I had yet another visitor on the veranda, which was a lot bigger and a lot browner than the smaller one. So I've had some diversity in terms of brown snakes on the veranda in the last couple of weeks, which has been fun. I am struggling to balance my personal psychological safety with also making sure that the snakes are feeling okay about being interrupted in whatever they happen to be doing. So it's been a fun week.
Good teeing up the topic there, Graham. That's good stuff there. And Winitha, how's your week been?
Hey, wow, my week has been pretty magical. I have had the privilege to serve some amazing people and have some fabulous conversations. The weather here, I'm located on the lands of the Yeagum Bay language region of the Kumaberry families, and the weather has been amazing except for today. But we need the rain. Rain is good for the earth. So I've been enjoying the weather, getting some vitamin D, enjoying the surf, not that I surf, but doggy paddling. And I have a little dog called Bubbles who is sleeping somewhere, probably in the bathroom because the tiles are cold. He doesn't cope very well with the heat. So been enjoying lots of time irritating him.
That's always fun to do with any dog, I feel like. The second they go to sleep, it's fun to just annoy them sometimes, I find. But that's awesome. And thanks so much for being on the Magical Learning Podcast this week. So, Winitha, tell us a little bit about yourself for people that might be being introduced to you for the first time today. Give us a little intro to yourself.
Yeah, well, I am a very proud Tamil Sri Lankan woman who has the absolute privilege and blessing to be living here in Australia on sacred country. And I have had multiple careers. I've always had a corporate career, and then I've also done a lot of work out in the community. So specifically working with refugees, asylum seekers, and newly arrived immigrants into Australia to help them not just survive, but thrive as well. So sometimes that looks like helping community in a very practical way. So I've had a lot of people stay at my home. I've had, taken food out of my own fridge, my own pantry, and given it to people. And I've also run programs to help skill people up to effectively look for jobs, to start businesses, and also to lead in the community as well. So I've been doing that work for a little over 20 years. I am probably older than what I look like, maybe. And I love that work. You know, it's the way that I've been raised. So if people know a little bit about Sri Lanka, it experienced a war for many years, of which a lot of tragedy and genocide and, a lot of trauma has happened in that country. And so that really is what propelled me to help others, because I saw at a very, very young age my privilege in living in Australia as opposed to living in Sri Lanka, and being of Tamil ancestry as well, and knew that I had to do something with this opportunity that I had in order of how can I help and serve others. And that's what happened. I was a very different kind of a kid. I watched a lot of documentaries on the civil rights movement in the US from the age of 5 onwards, and was very intrigued about how rights for Black folk were achieved. There's still a really long way to go, and specifically the civil rights movement and what was achieved in that specific time in history. And was also really intrigued by the Black Panther movement. And I think it planted in me a lot of seeds of difference. And also I grew up in a very a white community, and had my own sort of awakening awareness of like, oh, actually my skin is a different color than everyone else's. And so that then started this process of inquiry of difference. And I was treated differently in school, being the only, I used to call myself a brown dot. So if you take a picture of the whole school, you can just look for that little brown dot. That brown dot's going to be me. And I started looking at difference, and what makes us perceive difference in each other is that perception of difference, good or bad, and what can I do? And then as I went into the corporate arena and started working at an executive level, and particularly when I went to the US and worked in the US and then came back, I had a different set of knowledge, a different set of awareness about my own experience as a brown woman of color working in pretty much, white corporate Australia, and started asking questions. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? And I came back to Australia and decided that I have two decisions that are available to me. I can complain and keep complaining, or I can do something about it. And I chose to do something about it. And so I merged my community work with my corporate experience and started a practice as a diversity and inclusion practitioner.
Amazing. What a journey. And that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that with us, Winitha. That's awesome. And the work you do is amazing. Let's jump into the topic today. You've picked the topic of inclusion and psychological safety for leaders. These two may seem a little different to people. So do you want to tell us about why you've chosen this topic?
So I find that we often talk about these two things as separate, two separate things. So we talk about inclusion and diversity, equity and equality, belonging and justice. And then we talk about psychological safety. And sometimes that perception of psychological safety can be from the context of high-performing teams. And absolutely, in order for teams to be high-performing, the number one driver of that is psychological safety. And if people don't feel included, don't feel like a sense of belonging in the workplace, if they're not treated with equality and equity, if they're not paid the same amount as their peers, then they're not going to speak up, they're not going to share, they're not going to bring new ideas to the table, and you're going to miss out on that cognitive diversity and that cognitive friction that's required for new ideas, that's required for new innovation and results as well in the workplace. And so really those things are integrated within each other. You can't have psychological safety without inclusion. You can't have inclusion without psychological safety. And at the same time, there are two different terms, and we can have conversations about them. So I like to talk about the two together. I like to separate, and I do like to bring it together as well. so we can better understand the connection and relationship to each other.
Great. Well, I think it's an amazing way to put these two ideas into one, and sort of, and it makes total sense while you're describing it, why these two have to be together. So I think that's great. So I think we're just going to jump into our first question. So Al, you'll first cab off the rank this week. So what question have you got and why'd you pick it?
Winnie, my question is, how do you define psychological safety? And is it the same in all areas of our lives? And just listening to you then, I'd love to know a little bit more about inclusion. Already just listening to you, I think, wow, there's a whole world out there that, you know, I wasn't aware of. You know, like you say, you have immigrants coming into our country. I'd never even imagined what it was like for them, I guess, in my sheltered world. So I was just wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on that, would be wonderful as well, please.
Yeah, amazing. Great question. And thank you for it as well. I define psychological safety as an environment as opposed to a person. So it's an environment where I feel like I can be me, where I don't feel like I have to. In inclusion, we have a term called code switching. So where I feel like I have to alter maybe my physical appearance, the way that I speak, the way that I behave, the decisions that I make, that I have to alter my identity in order to fit in. And so psychological safety for me is where that actually does not happen. So rather than looking at what it does look like, I like to look at it in the context of what it doesn't look like, to better help understand that. And so in a practical sense, psychological safety might look like, if I was to speak up, I might get silenced or I might get gaslighted for all that. And so environments that are not psychological safe don't happen over time. It's not like someone comes into the workplace and declares, I'm going to make this an environment that is not psychological safe. It's something that happens and develops over time. And that is generated by a set of behaviors. And I think particularly in today's environment, you know, when generally not going to see people say to another human being, you need to shut up. Now, people might say that, I don't know, but generally in the workplace, I don't see that. What we do see is people dismissing people. What we do see is people discrediting people's ideas. What we do see is people taking credit for other people's ideas. That still happens at a leadership level as well. I mean, you know, the other day I was talking with a client where she was sharing in that private conversation where her manager takes credit for her idea. So she'll present an idea and he will take credit for it by presenting it as his own idea. And so we had a discussion about that and we're exploring about that more deeply. And so when these behaviors happen in the workplace and we see it time and time again, what it's telling our conscious mind and also our unconscious mind is that every time we do share ideas, every time we do speak up, every time we give feedback, negative things happen. And when negative things happen, we start to go inside and we start to go in as a form of self-preservation and as a survival mechanism, right? It's how we're wired. And so for me, psychological safety is where I feel like I can be myself. I can, the best parts of who I am, I'm not talking about all the, you know, parts of myself that are not so great, the parts that I need to work on. I'm talking about the best parts of ourselves. So from a practical perspective, it looks like the ability to give and receive feedback. It looks like the ability to bring ideas to the table, even if they are completely outside of the box or completely outside of budget. It's about the ability to, even to my manager, to call them in or call them out on a comment or behavior that was not okay or that can be improved, to help them stand in their integrity as well. What it does look like is, you know, the ability to, you know, bring different ideas and perspectives to the table that others may not have thought about as well. We haven't thought about this, we haven't thought about that. So it's ability to speak up. And if we are in a team environment or when we have meetings where there is silence, that to me is a danger. And that's not in an environment that is potentially psychologically safe. And it does affect all areas of our life, right? So I do mentor and work with a lot of young people. And I'm starting them here, use the term, I don't feel safe in my family, or I don't feel safe in my romantic relationship or my relationship with my partner. And they're not talking about that purely from a physical sense. They're actually talking about that from a psychological sense and about And you might have experienced this in your own, you know, relationships in your own life where you have wanted to say something to someone, but you were fearful of saying that because you weren't sure about how they might react. You weren't sure what the consequences to you might be. And so you chose to keep silent or to say things in a really indirect way, hoping that they would mind read you and that they would kind of guess it. So you, because what you were doing in that moment was you were lowering the risk of them maybe verbally attacking you or them being like there being some kind of severe negative consequences. Is that
thanks,
helpful?
Rudy.
Yeah.
Very helpful you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's come across so beautifully. I love that idea of, you know, I can be me. And I guess that curiosity around the people around me, and do people around me feel safe to be them? Or am I judging and shutting them down?
Yeah.
Thanks, Winnie.
Awesome. Yeah. And thank you for that. That was a great answer. Great question there, Al. Great stuff. We loved that one. All right, let's go to Danette. Danette, what was your question? And tell us why you picked it.
So, Winnie, I always have two questions because I just love to ask questions and I love what you do. So this is awesome. So my first question is, why are inclusion and psychological safety important for leaders? So when they do this well, what does them and their people benefit from?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking, Danette. So there's so much data and information out there about what it does for the organization, but also for leadership teams. So we know definitely that it adds to the bottom line. Different sources say different numbers based on who was in that sample size or in that research study. And so we know that it's generally somewhere between 30 to 40% in terms of bottom line improvement. We also know that it helps with decision-making. So some sources say that helps decision-making by 30 to 40%. When it comes to creativity and innovation, you know, when new ideas presented and there is inclusion, there is psychological safety, we know that there's a higher rate of ideas being productized when there is inclusion, psychological safety, than if there was not. And that those ideas, the quality of those ideas are going to be high and leading more towards the innovation side as opposed to a current idea that has a couple of tweaks and differences to it. It helps leaders to have better connection to their team members as well. So when team members feel safe and when they feel included, they're going to speak up and they're going to bring things to their attention as well, which is really, really super important. Because as we know with the work health and safety, particularly in Victoria, changes and other states that those changes have been made. Psychosocial hazards is now officially recognized as something that the work safe organizations need to look out for and to monitor and to regulate as well. And so particularly for leaders, if we have a culture of speak up where, and in order for speak up to happen, people need to feel safe, they need to feel included, they need to feel like they belong. And if people speak up and say and call people in and out or bring to the leader's attention behaviors that are potentially discriminatory or bullying in nature, then that means that we can, there's a higher likelihood that we can react to that in that moment in a way that is going to be proactive. So we're going to proactively react to that situation as opposed to that situation escalating. Of which we're now in a, you know, not in a great situation and environment as well. So in terms of our people experiencing stress, because discrimination, bullying, harassment does increase stress levels in people, extreme prolonged stress does drive up people's likelihood of experiencing disease and autoimmune conditions and people's immune systems, you know, drop as well. And so if we have a legal, ethical, moral obligation to look after our people. And so if we don't have a speak up culture that is driven by inclusion and psychological safety, and people aren't speaking up about things as they happen in real time and bringing it to the forefront, then how can we lead and manage that? Because that's our responsibility at the end of the day. And so that's why it's really super important for leaders. Because, you know, we would have seen that iceberg model of you know, leaders only know like that 4% of things that are going on in our organization. And, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And so we do rely on our teams to bring things to the table and to tell us things. But that's on us. That's our responsibility to cultivate that. And what I've seen in my work is that environments and cultures where there isn't speak up culture are environments where that unfortunately has been led by the top. So we have a group of leaders or CEOs that are not role modeling speak up culture themselves and not role modeling inclusive behaviors and communication, not role modeling psychological safety in the workplace. And that has a rolling impact. You know, like we know that phenomenon, which is social contagion, which is people mimic behaviors by those that are closest around them. And then all of a sudden you've got a culture where everyone doesn't speak up. And then essentially we're engaging in those behaviors of which the leadership team or the CEO is engaging in as well. And that is a very dangerous place to be in terms of an organization.
That's a great answer. And it sort of answers, I suspect, most of my next one, which was, what does it cost organizations when they don't do these two things well together?
Yeah, absolutely. So we can flip some of those things. So it affects the bottom line, it affects decision-making, it affects innovation, it affects performance in the organization. So performance levels drop. We also don't attract the best talent because people are now asking questions. And I know this because particularly in the Black, Indigenous, people of color community, people will come to me and ask me questions about, I'm thinking of applying to work for this organization. Winifred, I know that you work with different companies. What do you think? People are now checking if organizations have a reconciliation action plan. They're checking if they have inclusion strategies, if they have inclusion targets. People are now empowered to know that they have options as well. And I think that's partly fueled by the gig economy, by the side hustle community, whatever you want to term it, freelance economy. People know now that they have options to get a paycheck basically at the end of the day and are no longer willing to just take any job. So organizations are missing out on really, really great talent. And that talent is what's needed to bring those new ideas to the table and to grow and enhance a company as well. Then there are legal, ethical considerations as well. So there's a lot of damage that's being done to people. We spend 70% of our life at work, and that's a very big relationship to have. And that's going to be longer than most marriages, unfortunately. And that's going to be longer than most relationships that we have with our best friends or people that are in our lives. And that's a decision that we're choosing to make. And for some people, it's a decision that we have to make. And so there's a legal, ethical responsibility there as well about how we're ensuring quality of life for our team members. If they're choosing to spend 70% of their life working in an organization, in an entity as well, there's a responsibility there. And when we don't do that well, we cause hurt and harm and damage. And that has a rolling impact as well. We know with trauma that there are some studies that show that trauma can be traced up to 14 generations before. So intergenerational trauma, it can be carried down through the DNA for up to 14 generations. And there are rolling impacts. So if a person was to unfortunately choose, like my father had chose to leave his company, I chose to leave my company as well because of discrimination. You know, there are rolling impacts. So with my father, it impacted all of us, you know, financially, because, you know, we didn't have the money to pay for groceries and to pay for bills and things for that. But for his own mental health and well-being, he had to make that decision, which I didn't understand at the time as a kid, as a young person. And now, you know, I ended up making that exact same decision myself. And so there's a rolling impact economically, socially, psychologically, on people as well, on relationships. And so organizations have an ethical, moral, and legal responsibility to take care of people.
Thank you. And thank you so much for sharing and being vulnerable too. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, amazing. It's lovely to hear. Graham, I'll go to you. Graham, what was your question and tell us about why you chose it?
I'm actually going to merge mine with John's, because looking at John's question, I think that both of them come from a similar perspective. So mine was really looking at what's one action that a leader can take to relatively quickly strengthen or shift their own sense of psychological safety, because I imagine that if as a leader, as a CEO, as a business owner, if I don't feel psychologically safe myself for whatever reason, then it becomes much harder for me to then give that respect to others. John's question was more about with all of the distraction and busyness of just business as usual today, and you know, life on planet Earth as a business owner in 2024 is so much more different than it was just 12 months ago. And it will change again, you know, in 2 hours' time, sort of thing. It just seems to be picking up pace. So as business owners and sometimes business leaders, we talk about organizations having that sort of moral, legal, ethical responsibility. And one, to provide inclusion and psychological safety for their staff. Now, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on where the responsibility sits in terms of the legal, moral, ethical responsibility to ensure psychological safety for business owners and leaders.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. So that's one of the things that I teach with psychological safety is what we dive into first is what does psychological safety look like for you? So if we are not, what I find with inclusion psychological safety is that if we are not in touch with our own pain and suffering, with our own exclusion, with our own sense of do we feel safe to speak up or not, how can we possibly relate and connect to the pain and suffering or the experiences of other people? And part of the responsibility of psychological safety is also it comes from a place of agency and autonomy. So what does psychological safety look like for me? What are the green flags of when I feel psychological safe? And what are the red flags of when I don't feel psychologically safe? So can I look back to my work experience? Can I even look back to my relationships for information and data to tell me about what those green and those red flags are? So if I was to work with an organization, one of the things that I would definitely encourage that I do is that I would participate in leadership meetings. And then I would also coach leaders privately, one-on-one, because it's also about creating that safe container, that safe environment where we can have those conversations. And we can go a little bit more deeper on what does that look like for you and what does that mean for you? And actually, do you feel safe? Because we're here, if we are unable to create it for ourselves and we're unable to create it for others. So that does absolutely mean that we do need to put our own oxygen mask on. And unfortunately, the characteristics that I have seen in my own practice is that leaders are not always open and willing to have those conversations and to be that vulnerable in a group setting as well. So doing that privately one-on-one with the CEO and with the leadership team is really important. And also, you know, particularly with a leader, if a CEO of a leader feels like they are not safe, then that's the first piece that we need to create it is the CEO's relationship with their executive team or the dynamic within the executive team. Actually, that's where we need to start creating psychological safety first, because if people are able to create it, then they have a really good idea of what it is and what it looks like. They're better, more equipped and better skilled and better, more empowered to actually go back and create it in their teams as well, because they're experiencing themselves. Again, we cannot create for others what we cannot create for ourselves. So that's the first job and the first responsibility. When it comes to BAU, I always say, right, because the two things that keep coming up for me is, for me, distraction is, they say time. Like, we just don't have the time. And then the other problem is the budget. And my response is, when something goes really bad, will you have the time and will you have the budget? Because my experience has been, that's when you find the time and you find the budget. And unfortunately, it's too late. So if I was to flip it and look at it from a customer experience, because I look at the customer experience as well as the employee experience. So if a customer didn't feel like they were included or felt a sense of inclusion in a store environment, and if they felt like a store member said something, you know, racist to them, and that customer was to go into social media and post that, and that was to go viral. And we don't know the full extent of the virality of that and the damage that was to have on the brand and the exposure that they've had and therefore how that's impacted consumers' trust, will you then find the time and the budget for it? And by that point, it's a bit too late, because now what we're doing is we're doing cleanup. And if I understand my business studies well, I love business, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. I'm not a capitalist, but I do love business. I've been obsessed with business since I was 15. And a lot of people think, you know, I'm a DEI practitioner who attends rallies and protests and marches up and down and does this, you know, fist pumping all the time. And I do. And I love everything about business, and I want to get all up in your business, right? I want to know everything about it. And so if I got my business learnings and experiences right, my experiences have told me that we need to be proactive and mitigate for risks rather than know what those risks are and allow them to happen under our watch of, and then of which case doing cleanup is the worst place to be. You know, I've been in so many situations with clients where we are in crisis mode and we are on the phone 10 o'clock at night, weekends. It sucks a lot of time. And that could have been avoided if we invested a bit of time, a bit of energy. I'm not asking for large amounts of time. I'm not asking for large budgets. I'm asking for a bit of time. I'm asking for a bit of budget for us to be proactive, because we know what the risks are. And from a WorkSafe perspective, if we know what the risks are and we haven't done anything about it, that's a dangerous place to be. In a court of law, they're going to look for a footprint. They're going to look for evidence that you were proactive. So Sex Discrimination Act, for example, talks about positive duty. Australian, you know, human rights organizations. So they're going to look for that footprint. And that ultimately in a court of law, that's going to be brought up. And that's a very dangerous place to be. So for me, if I look at it from a risk perspective, we do have to make the time. Business is always going to be a distraction. We're always going to be tight on budget. I don't think anything's going to change anytime soon. And if we have time for a new product, if we have time for an org transformation, if we have time to redo out some software in the business, if we have time to launch a new product or a new service offering, if we have time to re-ramp our loyalty program with our customers, if we have time to expand and open 20 new stores or expand market share by 30%, how can we say that we do not have time when we are in the business of human beings? When we are in the business of business is one human being connecting to another human being. And if you know this information, the legal ethical responsibility to not act on that is unethical in my mind. If you know that something is wrong and you still go ahead and do it, I'm not sure that's a good thing. It's like stealing. If I know stealing is bad and I still go ahead and steal, that's not a good thing. And so even when we look at, you know, research by Alderman and we look at trust, businesses are one of the last places that people look at as a place that they trust. If we break that trust with our people and we break that trust with our customers, that is a very dangerous place to be. And if that is one of the last places that our customers and our employees trust regarding, you know, a whole bunch of factors, that can also be leveraged. There is opportunity in that as well. And so I absolutely understand that BAU, business as usual, is a distraction and that the work can be overwhelming. And I always say that that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you simplify it. I'm here to take out the overwhelm, and I'm here to make it really practical. So from a practical perspective, psychological safety, what can we do? In our meetings, we can have a list of everyone's names. And as everyone has spoken, we can check off their name. And we can do that over a couple of meetings. If we do that over a couple of meetings, we can start to see patterns. Now, we need to understand that sometimes people don't speak for a variety of reasons. Perhaps they're neurodiverse. Perhaps they are introverts. Perhaps they are people that like to receive information and then go away and think about it. And that's how they do their best thinking. But we can take that information, we can look at that data, and we can start asking ourselves questions. We can provide avenues and opportunities for people to speak to us. So one of the things that I love leaders to do is rather than a, because a lot of times we go to our leaders and ask them questions, right? We're asking them questions to put out fires, like basically all the time. And what we can do is actually flip that. So rather than ask me anything, we can say, tell me something. So we can run, probably block out like 1 or 2 hours every week or every fortnight or every month where team members at any level and area of the organization can book private time with us and tell us something. Tell us something about the experience they're having in the workplace, what it's like to work in this organization. And they can book in that time, 15 minutes, half an hour, and have that private time with us. So MailChimp is, we all know MailChimp, and MailChimp went through a situation where a lot of women of color, people of color, actually left the organization, and the CEO and the executive team had no idea. And so they did this. And when they did this, they're like, oh, okay, we understand what's going on. But they didn't know that before because they were so focused on growing the business and trying to cope with, you know, mass growth. And they lost a lot of good people and it got media attention. Very negative, you know, media attention about racism and sexism that was going on in the organization. And that demanded that they set aside that time. So one of the ways that they approached that was to give everyone a leadership team a specific task. And that task was to go out to people and talk to people. And people aren't always going to trust and share that information. And we've got to do that. That's why we've got to do that repeatedly as well. It also helps to bring an external, as you will know in the work that you do, when you go in and you talk to people and people feel that there's more trust, they're talking with an external, they're more likely to open up and share that information. So running a diagnostic in an organization is a very useful thing that people can do to assess actually where psychological safety is in the organization as well. One of the comments that I get, so I coach a lot of people that have experienced marginalization in the workplace. And so one of the things that keeps coming up is that leaders don't even acknowledge them. They don't even say hello to them. So one of the things that, and that comes up a lot, like you will be very surprised. Like they don't even see me. They walk past me and they don't even say hello. They walk past me in the corridor. They don't acknowledge me. People are picking up on that and it's really affecting people. And so one of the ways to create psychological safety is really simple. When you pass people, acknowledge them and don't be like, hey, and pass them. Or in a team meeting, spend some time with people, get to know them. Go beyond your direct reports, connect with people, talk to them, understand what's going on in their world, understand what's really important to them. And when people feel like they can open up to you, they will open up and they will speak up.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing answers there as well. Let's jump into Kanika's question, which was, what was a business that you've worked with that took inclusion seriously and what were the outcomes? What did that look like?
Yeah, so thank you, Kanika, for your question. I would say that's a client that I, actually a small business that I have worked with. We didn't have that many live training sessions together. I think we only had maybe 2 or 3 training sessions. And as you will know in the work that you do, that's not a lot of time to have with people. And ultimately, if people don't put the learnings into action, there's not going to be change. And being a small business, that's all I had a budget for. And so I also gave a bit of extra bit of my time to help them and ran those 3 sessions with their team. What I really loved was the CEO would come back to me after every session. So we would have a debrief meeting and she would come to me with a list of, here are all the things that I learned. These are all the actions that I'm planning on taking. So these are all the edits and tweaks that I'm making to the business. And these are the edits and tweaks that I am making in terms of my own behavior, my own communication. What do you think of that? She would have documentation, policies, processes. She would flick that to me. She was fully invested. So even though we only ran those 3 sessions, she absolutely milked them, every single one of those sessions. And it was very action orientated. And for those that know me personally will know that I'm all about action and taking action and taking immediate action without procrastinating. And so I love that she did that after every single session. And even after the session, she would come back to me and she would report. I didn't ask her to report. She has nothing to report to me. I don't ask my clients to do that, but she'd come back to me and she would say, these are how the actions are going. What do you think? I was thinking of elevating them and taking them to the next level, to the next step, and doing this and this and this. And so she really loved, because one of the things like I always tell clients is that when we end our engagements, is I say that I'm here as a resource. If you have a question, like, don't feel shy, like reach out to me. If you're struggling with something, like, I know how hard this is. I struggle, you know, I still struggle with what to say, how to say it. I still question about myself, you know, and I have people calling me out on stuff and feel that sense of shame that comes with people calling you out on how what you said was really patriarchal, and feel that pressure even more because I am the person who's supposed to be an expert on this, and I get it and I know it. So if you're struggling, like, don't struggle alone, like, reach out. And not many people do, right? And so I love that she took me up on that offer, and she even invited me to her 40th birthday party, which I loved. And unfortunately I couldn't make it because I was interstate, but I you know, she's someone who I know is also really in my corner, and I am absolutely in her corner as well. And it really empowered me, really motivated me. So it showed me that, you know, she was serious about the learning. I've had some of her team members, they, you know, lead by example, social contagion. I had some of her team members, you know, that training was like 2-3 years ago. So I think recently, a couple months ago, one of her team members said to me, reach out to me specifically to tell me this. I still remember what you taught us, and I'm still learning it, and I'm still practicing it, and I want you to know that. And I was like, wow, thank you. And I expect that she's role modeling that behavior because of the CEO of the organization is doing that. So yeah, that's someone that takes inclusion seriously. Like, she literally came to me with a notebook and a pen, and it was like she really studied everything. She pulled it apart, she studied it, and even in the live sessions, she asked questions. She didn't care about what she looked like to her team members that reported to her. She asked questions and was willing to be vulnerable in not knowing the answers.
Amazing. Well, what a great answer. And look, we have more questions, but I think we're going to have you back on to talk to us more about this, because it's been an awesome conversation. But before we wrap up, let's grab some final thoughts from people. So I might start with you, Al. Any final thoughts on today's conversation and thoughts on inclusion and psychological safety for leaders?
Thank you so much, Winnie. Yeah, you've really brought a lot of clarity to my thinking, where I've got so many examples in my world of, you know, where I am providing psychological safety and where I'm not. I love that idea of, you know, I can be me and allowing, you know, others around me to be them. Like, it breaks my heart realizing now how people have, you know, got that mask on, they're hiding because, you know, I'm expecting them to be somebody else. So thank you so much, Winnie. And my action is to say hello and acknowledge the people around me everywhere I go.
Amazing.
Great stuff, Alan. I love that. Danette, any final thoughts on today's conversation and inclusion and psychological safety for leaders?
Such a great discussion. Totally agree with Jez that we need to get you back, because yeah, there's a whole stack of stuff we can unpack. I really love the bit that, yes, people will say they don't have the time, they don't have the money and stuff, and yet how much time do we waste in meetings that really don't achieve anything? So even thinking about what meeting can we perhaps bump in order to invest the time and the energy, because this is about getting the best out of everyone, and organisations that aren't doing that really aren't going to last very long. So this is such an important topic, and really grateful for all that you've shared today. It's been awesome. Thank you.
Graham, any final thoughts on today's topic and conversation and inclusion and psychological safety for leaders?
Just to echo everyone else, Winnie, thank you. It's been eye-opening in so many ways. I wanted to pick up on the, and Al sort of mentioned it anyway, but I think you used the term code switching. We talk a lot about image management, but it's essentially the same thing. So it's the mask that we put on when we show up to work, so that we don't offend other people or upset them or whatever it happens to be, and how important it is for us to create environments where we don't feel that we need to do that anymore. it's been fantastic. So thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And yeah, I mean, I just also wanted to say, I took like a note. One thing that really stood out to me, because it brought so many memories of being at uni, being in different offices, but there, if there's silence a lot, that it can be a symptom of an unsafe place. It can also be the symptom of, as you were saying, people with, you know, it could be neurodiversity as well. But there are certainly instances in my mind where I think of it and I go, this was just because this was unsafe. And we had a teacher going, how come no one's answering me, you know? And now that all just clicked for me. So that was definitely a part of it. But the whole conversation was really amazing. Do you have any final thoughts on today's conversation and inclusion and psychological safety for leaders?
I will. And these are borrowed ideas. These are not my own. And the two things that I like to leave people with is a culture is not defined by its values. It's defined by what it is willing to tolerate. And that's the job of a leader, is to interrogate what we're tolerating. And rather than to take the overwhelm and to take away the stress, rather than focusing on what is politically correct, to focus on what is kind.
That is beautiful. Now, if someone's listened to this conversation, they've gone, you know what? We need to get Winnetha in. She's got some important wisdom for us. Where is the best place for them to interact with you? Yeah,
absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I hang out a lot on LinkedIn. The benefits of having an ethnic name is pretty easy to find. So LinkedIn, Instagram, and then also on my website. You can also email me directly, which is hello@Winnetha, W-I-N-I-T-H-A.
Amazing. Well, all those links will be in the description, so you can just go jump on those right now. To everybody on the phone, on the call today, it's been amazing. I feel like I've learned so much. I've taken so many notes. It's been great. Thanks again for all your questions, and thanks so much for answering them, Winnetha. And for everybody that's been sharing and supporting the show, thank you so much. And as always, everybody, have a magical week.